Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1938, with a release date of October 3rd, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The ARRL again asks the FCC to make ham radio primary in the 2300 to 2305 megahertz band. The Wireless Institute of Australia campaigns to save that nation's 9-centimeter ham radio allocation. An FCC commissioner takes a close look at the 400 megahertz and up spectrum. Good news for Brevard County, Florida ham radio tower exemption. Hollywood celebrates ham radio operation, brings a big surprise, and an interesting new rover design is being tested by NASA. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1938, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is this week's report.
The ARRL has once again asked the FCC to elevate the status of amateur radio from secondary to primary in the 2300 to 2305 megahertz band. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, reports.
This request is part of comments filed by the League in response to an ATT mobility petition for rulemaking, one that seeks new air-to-ground communication system spectrum in the 2.3 GHz wireless communication service. The AT&T petition is designated RM-11731. It asks the Commission to authorize what's known as LTE-based in-flight connectivity in the wireless communications service C&D blocks at 2305 to 2315 MHz and 2350 to 2360 MHz respectively for airlines and airline passenger use. AT&T asserts that the restrictions on out-of-band emissions and power limits to protect adjacent band users make the use of the C&D blocks very problematic. As such, the wireless provider asked the FCC for rules changes to permit the deployment of this service using what it termed as currently fallow spectrum, while also preserving adequate interference protection for users of adjacent bands. But says the ARRL, notwithstanding what it calls AT&T's broad and nebulous claim, there is no showing anywhere in the petition that the proposed rules changes would permit any continued amateur radio operations on a secondary basis in a shared A block from 2305 to 2310 MHz. Also, there is nothing in the petition that amateur radio operations in the adjacent spectrum would be protected from licensed out-of-band emissions if the FCC were to implement the requested changes. In its comments, the ARRL asserts that to date, the FCC has failed to protect the amateur radio operations at 2300 to 2305 MHz from wireless communication service out-of-band emissions. The ARRL says that this band is substantially utilized by radio amateurs for weak signal long-distance communications, that only by circumstances, due to a lack of a primary occupant, has amateur radio been able to enjoy that segment as a de facto primary user. Based on this, the ARRL asked the FCC to recognize the status at 2300 to 2305 MHz and to elevate it from secondary to primary use for radio amateurs. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
The complete text of this ARRL announcement was sent out to League members as ARLB019. It can also be found online at tinyurl.com/ARRL-2300-primary. Meanwhile, a similar situation is taking place down under. That's where Wireless Institute of Australia has lodged a strong submission to the Department of Communications in the hope of keeping amateur radio access to segments of the 9-centimeter band that includes a 25 megahertz block at 3400 to 3425 megahertz and a 50 megahertz block at 3492.5 to 3542.5 megahertz. This past August, the Minister for Communications issued the Australian Communications and Media Authority draft direction to enable licensing of these two spectrum blocks to the National Broadband Network. This for fixed wireless services in metro fringe and hard-to-service areas of the major Australian mainland cities. The block at 3400 to 3425 megahertz overlays the narrowband weak signal and satellite segment in the band plan at 3400 to 3410 megahertz. Many countries throughout the three ITU regions have amateur allocations covering this segment. The Wireless Institute of Australia argues for retention of 3400 to 3410 megahertz as essential to maintain harmonization with amateur allocations around the world. Some UHF and super high frequency spectrum could be up for reassignment at some future date. This when the United States begins ushering in the next generation of broadband technology known as 5G. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, reports.
In a September 22nd talk before a communications industry conference in Atlanta, Georgia, FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworkel said that we can no longer limit ourselves to frequencies in the traditional range. We need to look elsewhere. The only question, said Rosenworkel, is where. She then said, and we quote, "First, I think we need to look low. We should explore if spectrum in the 400 megahertz range can be repurposed for mobile broadband use." She went on to note that will not come overnight because this band is segmented in many small parts. These parts are a puzzle that does not fit together easily. Rosenworkel also noted that if we can find a way to put even a few pieces together, we may be able to develop a new swath of airwaves prime for mobile broadband. But the FCC commissioner did not limit her comments to the 400 megahertz range. She also noted, and we again quote, "I think we need to look high, very, very high. Let's burst through our old 3 gigahertz ceiling. Let's take a look at spectrum all the way up to the 60 gigahertz and maybe all the way to the 90 gigahertz. At these ranges, we can aggregate spectrum and allow data-intensive applications to ride across hundreds of megahertz at a time." She ended this part of her presentation by noting that a look low and a look high policy like the one she is suggesting would require thinking through some novel technical and policy issues. But, says Commissioner Rosenworkel, if we can get them right, we will have more resources to play with as we move to the next generation networks. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB reporting.
You can read Commissioner Rosenworkel's very interesting 5-page presentation at tinyurl.com/future-broadband-G5. In DX Upfront, DK7LX and G3SWH will be on the air as VP5/G3SWH from Grand Turk Island through October 9th. Activity is on 80 through 10 meters using two stations with wire antennas and operating CW only. The Islands on the Air website indicates that contact with Grand Turk is needed by over 60% of participants in the IOTA program. The operators say that they hope to provide an online log search facility, but this is subject to the availability of a good internet connection. The Chilean D-Expedition team will be active as XR2T from Damas Island between October 8th and the 12th. The main aim of this D-Expedition will be to work the greatest possible number of unique call signs, thus offering a possibility lower power and QRP stations to make contact. Operations will be on 40 through 10 meters using mainly SSB, CW, and the digital modes. QSL via CE3OP, direct or by the Bureau. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the VE3 DPL repeater serving Stratfordville, Ontario, Canada. The Brevard, Florida County Commission plans to take a final vote on rules that set height and design guidelines for cellular and other radio towers in unincorporated areas. It also would create a process for streamlined approval of towers that are situated on county-owned land. And all of this looks like good news for the county's radio amateurs. When the proposed new rules were first announced, area ham radio operators objected because they had no exemption for private radio antennas. They've had an exemption under the current rules since 2003. Recognizing the oversight, the commissioners directed county staff to add the exemption to the proposed rules. They also took a preliminary, unanimous vote in favor of the overall series of rule changes. County Commissioner Chuck Nelson noted that the potential of increased regulation on amateur radio operators was an unintended consequence of the nearly 2 years of work the county had gone through to craft new regulations for the cellular telephone tower industry. Nelson added that the county wants to get back to where it was for the amateur radio operators. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/Brevard-Florida-Towers. A Melbourne, Australia man who admitted that he deliberately disrupted a taxi company's radio communication system has been fined $3,500 and ordered to pay court costs. This after pleading guilty to three offenses under the Australian Radio Communications Act of 1992. The September 24th court finding follows an investigation by the Australian Communications and Media Authority into allegations of radio interference to the West Gippsland Taxis proprietary company. Inspectors from the regulatory body found the unnamed defendant using a transmitter that he had modified to disrupt taxi service operations. The defendant pled guilty to operating a radio communications device without a license, to causing a radio emission to be made by a transmitter knowing that it was a non-standard piece of gear, and causing substantial disruption or disturbance of radio communications. No explanation was given as to why the defendant committed the illegal act. This prosecution follows recent enforcement action taken against two security companies found operating radio communications devices without a license to do so. A meeting of the ARRL's executive committee was to take place on Saturday, October 4th in Memphis, Tennessee. Among the agenda items to be discussed is the continuation of evaluation of strategies to improve the FCC amateur radio enforcement program. Another is a proposal for modification of FCC rules for licensing of FEMA stations and use of special call signs denoting FEMA in a manner similar to military recreation and club station licensing. Look for a complete report as soon as the league publishes the minutes on this gathering. Some names in the news. Former Radio Society of Great Britain President Don Beattie, G3BJ, has been elected as IARU Region 1 President at the recent IARU General Conference held in Varna, Albina, Bulgaria. Elected with G3BJ were Vice President Faisal Al-Ajmi, 9K2RR, Treasurer Eva Thierman, HB9FPM/OK3QE, and Secretary Dennis Green, ZS4BS. Those elected to serve on the organization's executive committee are Thilo Kutz, DL9KCE, David Court, EI3IO, Oliver Tabakovsky, Z32TO, Ivan Stauning, OZ7IS, and Ranko Boka, 403A. At that same meeting, it was also announced that the organization's 2017 meeting will be held in Germany and will be hosted by that nation's National Amateur Radio Society, the Deutscher Amateur Radio Club, or DARC. Astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti, IZ0UDF, has completed the official crew poster for the International Space Station Expedition 42. The poster parodies the popular The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by the late author Douglas Adams, and is being called the best crew poster yet released. There is no cost to download the poster, but we must warn you that it is a high-resolution file and will require some 57 megabytes of storage space. It is in PDF format at tinyurl.com/expedition-42-poster. Currently, Expedition 42 is slated to launch from Baikonur in Kazakhstan on November 23rd. In addition to Samantha Cristoforetti, also flying with her to the ISS, will be Anton Shklaparov and Terry Wirtz. Cristoforetti is expected to return to Earth in May 2015. The late Reverend George Creel was a United Methodist minister who pastored churches across North Alabama for more than 60 years. His hobby was restoring antique radios and phonographs, specializing in radios from the early 1900s. Now, the Creel family has donated their father's vast stock of vintage radio tubes, along with a collection of photographs of antique radio equipment, to the Alabama Historical Radio Society. This photo collection includes some very early amateur radio gear, along with a 1914 business letter written by David Sarnoff when he was an executive of the Marconi Wireless Telegraph Company. Tom Killian is the Society's president. He noted that many of the tubes are valuable, are difficult to find, and they can certainly use them. Also, the framed photographs give an accurate portrayal of the earliest days of radio broadcasting. As such, they are a special treasure to display. The Alabama Historical Radio Society is located in the city of Birmingham and is chartered as an Alabama nonprofit corporation. It was founded in June 1989 to provide an opportunity for men and women of all ages to pursue their interest in early radio. Lake Town Park in Kenner, Louisiana, will host the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Radio Day on October 18th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. local time. This event commemorates the 75th anniversary for the Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla 45 and High Caliber Communications Division 4. It is also a day dedicated to communication on the high frequency bands by Coast Guard Auxiliary and non-Coast Guard amateur radio operators around the nation. The gathering is scheduled to be held in the park's Shelter Number 2 with an admission fee of $5 per attendee. AMSAT has announced that a new premium collectible is now available for qualifying donations to the Fox Satellite Program. This in the form of a unique challenge coin for donors who have contributed at the $100 level or higher. AMSAT says that the coin is shaped as an isometric view of a Fox 1 CubeSat, complete with details such as the stowed UHF antenna, solar cells, and camera lens viewport. It is struck in 3 millimeter thick brass, plated with antique silver, and finished in bright enamel. The coins are scheduled for delivery just prior to the 2014 AMSAT Space Symposium and will first be distributed to donors attending that gathering. The design may be seen at tinyurl.com/AMSAT-Fox-coin. According to John Amadeo, NN6JA, the second K6H Hollywood Celebrates Ham Radio on-the-air operation went very well. The event took place on Sunday, September 28th from the historic Stage 9 at the CBS Studio Center, which is currently the home of the hit ABC situation comedy Last Man Standing. Amadeo is the spokesman for the event. He says that there were 6 operating positions that were on the air from the start to finish. He reports that 10 meters was good all day, 20 started heating up in the late morning, they had some 40-meter contacts in the afternoon. Meantime, internet-connected stations in Connecticut, New York City, Washington, and Florida tied to Stage 9 reported having contacts all day long, as did those using D-Star Reflector 12A. Perhaps the biggest surprise came in the announcement that the show's star, Tim Allen, whose character includes playing a ham operator, now is one in real life. In one interview session with a volunteer examiner team conducted by Tom Medlin, W5KUB, it was revealed that Allen, under his real name of Tim Dick, had passed his technician test, but they declined to make his call public. It didn't take much sleuthing on the part of the ham radio community to find out that he had been assigned the call KK6OTD, with that information plastered all over the various social networks shortly after the K6H operating event ended. Amadeo concluded by saying that there were some 35 operators and guests who showed up this year. And while there's no final contact count available as we go to air, NN6JA says that everyone who took part enjoyed being on the set of Last Man Standing and being a part of this year's K6H Hollywood Celebrates Ham Radio operation. The fourth season of Last Man Standing with Tim Allen, KK6OTD, portraying Mike Baxter, KA0XTT, was scheduled to premiere with a double episode on Friday, October 3rd on the ABC television network. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Scientists have found a way to create a special material that could help in developing super-fast computers that can perform lightning-fast calculations without overheating. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, reports.
Material science and engineering professor Feng Liu of the University of Utah led the study that explained how they had developed a new topological insulator that has the potential to behave in two ways. The first is that it can act as an insulator on the inside, while secondly conducting electricity on the outside. Ever since the researchers discovered almost a decade ago that the topological insulators can be used as a class of material designed to speed up computers, scientists have been trying to develop such a material that creates a large energy gap. This translates into the amount of energy consumed by the electron to conduct electricity in a given material while allowing the electricity to be conducted on a material's surface so that a computer can be operated at the room temperature while remaining stable. The University of Utah team found that bismuth metal deposited on silicon can lead to the creation of a more stable and large-gap topological insulator. As the bismuth layer is atomically bonded and electronically isolated from the silicon layer, it leads to the creation of that type of large energy gap. Moreover, the research team says that this process can be very cost-effective in the development of next-generation super high-speed computing devices. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The study was published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/new-super-computer. Benjamin Longmire, KF5KMP, and his team are looking for stations in the Azores and Portugal to help track their ham radio floater balloons. According to Longmire, his team in Project Ether launched a balloon that did a lap around the Midwest U.S. and then headed east past Nova Scotia and is believed to be still floating. Longmire says that his group has no contacts in the Azores or Portugal. As such, they are requesting help in contacting some of the radio amateurs in those geographic regions that might be able to decode the APRS packets. The balloon uses the tactical call sign of AETH-21-9 and transmits APRS 144.390 MHz FM. Longmire adds that two more experimental balloons will be heading into the Atlantic using the tactical call signs of AETH-22-1 and AETH-22-3. Like its predecessor, these floater balloons will also be transmitting FM APRS on 144.39 MHz as well. Engineers at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida have begun testing small robots and navigation software. This to see if it's possible for an autonomous machine to mimic the process that ants use to scout for and then collect resources. The robots, which are being referred to as swarmies, resemble a stripped-down radio-controlled truck. They feature an onboard camera and direction finding gear, programmed to work on their own to survey an area, then call the other robots to assist in digging, should something valuable be found. The current testing is to determine whether the software that will control the robots will work, and if the overall swarmy concept is worthwhile. The theory behind their development is to equip operational robots working in space missions to scan the soil of an alien world for water, ice, or other resources that can be turned into fuel or breathable air for astronauts. During the evaluation, the NASA engineers will use a simulator that will enable them to test the swarmies' networking ability with additional robots without actually having to build them. As testing proceeds, the team plans to include an experimental mining robot also designed at the Kennedy Space Center to try out different techniques for digging into the lunar or Martian surfaces to gather useful materials. Paul Stetzer, N8HM, reports that the first 73-on-73 FunCube award has been issued to Wyatt Dirks, AC0RA. Dirks submitted a list with a total of 74 unique calls worked on AO73 since September 1st. The award aim is to promote activity on the AO73 FunCube satellite. Simon Brown, G4ELI, has released a simple Windows program which displays gray line, geomagnetic indices, solar data, as well as sunrise and sunset times. The program is free of cost and can be downloaded at tinyurl.com/G4ELI-gray-line. In DX, members of the Radio Club Argentino will activate the special prefix and call sign AY4E from the Argentine exclave Martin Garcia Island in Uruguayan waters between October 16th and the 19th. Operations will be on 160 meters through 70 centimeters using CW, SSB, and some digital modes. QSL to LU4QQ direct or LU4AA via the Bureau. DL3DRN will be on the air stroke SV5 from Rodos Island through October 9th. Activity will be holiday style, mostly on the HF bands, using CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. KD6XH will be operational from Samoa as 5W0XH between October 23rd and 28th. Activity will take place before, during, and after the CQ Worldwide DX SSB contest, which is slated for October 25th and the 26th. QSL via his home call sign. K5KUA will be on the air, Stroke 5 from Galveston Island, between November 14th and the 16th. Activity will be on CW only as time permits. QSL via his home call sign, direct, or by the Bureau. An online log search will be available on Club Log. Lastly, VK6MH, who also holds the call sign GM4AWB, will be active as VK0MH from Macquarie Island between this November through April of 2015. No other information is available at this time. And finally this week, the very popular Pennsylvania CUSO party will be taking place on the weekend of October 11th and 12th. Here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Mark Abramovich, NT3V, with the details.
CQPA party, CQ Pennsylvania will be the calls hitting the bands as hundreds of hams from Pennsylvania and hundreds more from around the country and even from Europe and the Caribbean look for contacts. The Nittany Amateur Radio Club in State College, Pennsylvania sponsors the party, calling it the Friendly CUSO Party. It's for contesters and non-contesters alike. If you want to work fast, you can. If you want to pace yourself, you can do that too. It's simple. Pennsylvania stations look for contacts with anyone, but searching especially for operators in these 67 counties in the Keystone State. Of course, working all the states, Canada, and a DX contact is part of the pursuit. Out of PA stations, work only Pennsylvania stations, and generally there are pretty many of them on the air. It's one of the few contests, by the way, that has a rest period. Activity begins Saturday, October 11th at 1600 Zulu and is suspended at 0500 Zulu. You heard that right, a rest break. The contest resumes Sunday, October 12th at 1300 Zulu and concludes at 2200 Zulu. You'll find stations on phone and CW as well as RIDI and PSK. And there will be activity on 10 meters all the way through 160. The bonus station, W3TDF, is operating stations in 10 counties in the eastern half of the state. Each contact with the bonus station is worth 200 points. Bottom line is to have some fun. Even if you're not a contester and you hear someone calling, stop by. Give them a contact. All they need from you is a number. If you've talked to other stations, just give them the number of stations you've talked to. 1, 2, 3, you know how that goes. And your ARL section or county if you're in PA. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
More about this year's event is on the web at tinyurl.com/PA-QSO-Party-2014. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.